Welcome back to the Famous Monsters Podcast, your home to all things horror, sci-fi, fantasy, and that time you didn't want to swim in the lake because I saw a shark
in the water.
I am George, your jack of all trades, and with me, the Falcon.
What's up, guys?
And we have with us today our art director, Jen Pham.
I don't want to go in the water.
Shut up. Do what I say.
Now.
Hello.
Before we get into it, let's hear a message from our sponsor. Hi, I'm Toby. You may remember me from commercials like "Who's Your Captain?" or "You're in Good Company." Well, today I'm here to tell you about Captain Company, the official store of all things Famous Monsters. It's your one-stop shop for monster apparel, posters, pins, patches, and so much more. Did you know you can even get back issues to Famous Monsters magazine? Well, what are you waiting for? Get on board and steer towards the fear at CaptainCompany.com. That's CaptainCo.com. Now back to the show. What the hell? I thought Toby got eaten by the Kraken. That sneaky little minx.
I've never actually met Toby before. Where did he come from?
Yeah, what happened to the last guy? I think he was the one that got eaten by a Kraken.
Well, I think the last guy was Cornelius, but we don't speak of Cornelius.
Oh, you're right. My bad.
We digress with these interns. We're here to do some movie reviews. This past week, we all got to see the movie Underwater, which is directed by William Eubank, starring Kristen Stewart, Jessica Henwick, T.J. Miller, Vincent Cassell, John Gallagher Jr., and I'm probably going to mess this name up, but Mamoudou Arthi. Very small cast, but big things happen in this movie. And I got to say, this has been a kind of a sleeper movie. Like, this didn't get much promotion going into it. And people probably are going to pass on it because it's a January kind of creature feature. And this is not the month where, you know, a big film really comes out.
Right.
But I felt this was actually worth watching. It doesn't bring anything new to the genre of, you know, underwater kind of claustrophobic horror things. Mm-hmm. But I had a wonderful time watching this. And Kristen Stewart does an amazing job. I loved her in this.
So did I. She really nailed it. And it is really a shame that it got so little marketing after being kind of put on hold for so long. But I haven't seen anyone say much bad about it so far. Like, everyone seems that I have seen gone to see it seems to really have enjoyed it, and I totally see why, because it was super fun to watch. It really delivered on what it wanted to do, which was just be a straightforwardly great monster movie.
Yeah, it gets pretty straight to the point. Like, there isn't a lot of any downtime, really. It goes from point A to point B.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
Yeah, which is really nice. It's funny. I think when the night me and Jen watched it, what is something you said, Jen? You're like, this movie has little to no plot, really no character development, which as you hear this, like, well, these are bad things. How did you guys enjoy this? But somehow with those two things not included in this film, it was better than watching The Grudge and Rise of Skywalker.
It still made more sense despite not having those things, you know what I mean?
Well, with regards to the character development, I think what this movie did so well was it didn't spend any extra time on character development. It just wove it into everything that was already happening really well. Like, one thing that I was telling Thurston just now, I really liked about the dialogue that everyone had was you could totally tell how well they fit into each of their roles. Like, Kristen Stewart's character, Nora, was a mechanical engineer, and she really embodied that sort of like mechanical engineer sort of thought process of, okay, here's the problem, here's the solution, we have to get from point A to point B, this is how we're going to do it, and we're going to do it. And it was like little things in the dialogue, like with her, there was some point, I don't remember specifically what she was using or what she was opening, but she had to open up a thing and it was going to be really loud. And so she said ears, telling everyone to cover their ears. And like, and then TJ Miller's character is just like, oh, who cares at this point? Which is a really fair point, but you could tell like that little bit, like you can totally tell that's a habit of that character. Mm-hmm. Just from doing it over and over and over. It was little stuff like that that I felt did a really good job of making each character kind of stand out.
No, that's true, because speaking of like that, Emily was one of the characters in this whole movie. You kind of don't really know, aside from Kristen Stewart's character being the mechanical engineer, because she says it outright, but you kind of don't really know what everyone's role is really on the ship until you see them doing, performing their actions. So for example, Emily, when they catch that alien underwater creature, who knows what it actually is, and she's examining it, because you can kind of tell she must be some kind of like marine biologist, because she's looking at it, oh, where's its mouth, where's its eyes, she's very curious. So those are like, it was very interesting how they kind of like played that through.
Which on this note, I should point out right now, this episode will be filled with spoilers, so prepare yourself for that. So now that that's been said, to add on to that, I think that's probably what made this so enjoyable and so fun. Even like character development wasn't huge, but there were characteristics that we could see from them, and they were all shown to us. Showing is so much better than having to be told.
For sure.
And like that, completely. Everyone had an action. You know, honestly, going back to kind of what you were talking about with Kristen Stewart's character of Nora. Within the first 5 to 10 minutes, you immediately see what she's capable of. Honestly, with the first, I could say less than 5 minutes, action kicks in. You can see that the place is starting to collapse in on itself. Water is coming in to the station, and she's running down this corridor, which is super intense. She's knocking on all the doors, trying to wake everyone up and get them to safety. And when they get to that room, which is her and that and one other guy, she only has one option, is to close that door, but she can't close the door because like their passes aren't working or whatever, their badges aren't working. So she breaks open that panel and she hotwires it, and she makes the panel work. You know, it's like, all right, I see what she can do. I immediately see her skill set. I see how useful she's going to be going forward. Like they wasted no time in that whatsoever.
Yeah.
And that, she also, that was really important.
She also did a really good job of showing how stressed and nervous she was in this super harrowing situation, but she was still like, you could tell that Nora is the type of person that just has to do the thing. Like she never stopped trying to get things done. She never stopped and sort of like gave up or had like a, like the other character, Emily, she had moments where she was like, I can't do this. I can't do this. Mm-hmm. And Nora was just like, we have to do this, even though you could see how terrified she was the whole time. Kristen Stewart did an excellent job of showing that, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if there was, I'm going to be straight over here. Like, I was definitely one of those people who just like, I had moments where I lost faith in Kristen Stewart. And it wasn't just because of Twilight either. Like there was those Huntsman films and some other things she was in. It's just like, all right. The potential I saw in her when I first saw like Panic Room and stuff, it's like, it's gone now. She lost all sense of what emotion is. But this movie, honestly, I felt it's like every emotion that you could have, she showed it.
Yeah. And
it was on the tip of her eyes, her everything. Everything.
The shakes in her hand, like the trembling.
Yeah. She did an excellent job. And honestly, what added to that is the full cast. Like they really worked well against each other. Having her against Jessica Henwick's character of Emily being the polar opposite of each other really accentuated each of their emotions and what they were going through.
It's very true. Like the whole cast had a really interesting dynamic with each other. Like especially the beginning with TJ Miller's character. This is one of his character was one of my main gripes with the movie, which is not saying a lot because it's not a huge gripe and there's only like two of them. But they kind of played up on his humor way too much for my taste in the beginning, and it did kind of take me out of it. I wish they had dialed it back a little bit, although it did kind of make you feel his death a little bit more of like, oh, there's going to be no comic relief now. Like we're in for like, it's going to be dire the rest of the time. There's nothing to cut it now.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you on that. I thoroughly enjoyed this film. And if there was something for me to complain about, it is going to be his character. And the thing is, I like T.J. Miller. I'm a big fan of his comedy. And I think he works very well in films for the comedic relief purposes that he serves. But it's true. Like I really looked at it. Every line that he spouted out in this whole film was always something funny. It was always some kind of little anecdote about something. He was always quoting or referencing a movie or a book or something, and it was supposed to lighten up the mood. But I never understood how he fit in this group. Like, I was like, what is his job? What does he do? Because he never showed or proved anything to me that told me, like, all right, he belongs here. As far as I'm concerned, he's probably the janitor.
But he knew how to dive. He knew all the process of like decompressing. He knew how to shoot. It was just like, what does he bring to the table? I don't understand.
Yeah. Like, there wasn't any moment.
There wasn't any moment of seriousness for him. It was like every single time, nothing was grounded.
Yeah. Like, I would have loved if he has had like at least one line. One line where he was just like, oh, well, the CCs of this and that, you know, if they go together and then explosions, you know, but hey, what do I know? Only a genius, you know. He could have been funny, but still showing that he's smart, you know. And he never really had that
door.
That was his smart moment. Even though it didn't do anything, they had to go right back out anyway.
That's true.
That was his shining light. Well, you know what? He had that bunny. And that bunny never got wet. So he must have.
Thank you for bringing that up. Yeah.
He had to have developed like moisture wicking or something. I don't know. we got to give him something, right?
Yeah. Well, at least the bunny made it to the surface.
But that bunny was lucky. Anyone who had that bunny was not going to die. That was kind of our sign. It's like, okay, they get to live because the bunny has to meet, you know, get to the surface and meet somebody. But that was a big thing for us. It was like, that bunny has been exposed to so much water, and yet it's never wet.
It's so clean.
That's true.
It's like, how is this possible?
Because it's a Disney movie now, right?
Well, owned by Disney. Yeah. Because it's made by Fox. They bought Fox, and they've just been sitting on it the whole time.
Yeah.
I'm still going to pretend that it's just a Disney movie and that bunny is like their guardian angel or like the fairy godmother. And all of them are Disney princesses.
Oh my God. That's hilarious.
That would change this whole movie, honestly. Like, I want to have like a director's cut by someone from Disney, and like the bunny has moments where it's talking to TJ Miller.
We can like do this. I believe in it.
Or the creatures see it and are repelled, like, oh, the power of stuffed animal friendship. I can't kill this human now.
Which, speaking of the creatures, you don't get to see a lot of, I think, a good light is shown. They're always shown in darkness, very quick and stuff. But what you do get to see of them, they looked really cool. Like, I liked what I did see. Mm-hmm.
They were horrifying. Their mouths with the little sort of, I don't even know how you would describe it, because they weren't, except for the big one, they weren't really tentacles, but it just was like, it felt like some kind of loose skin.
It was very fleshy.
Yeah. I have mentioned on this podcast before that I don't get scared when I go see horror films, and my mom is always asking me like, oh, you saw that movie, was it really scary? And I'm like, no, because it's a movie and it doesn't scare me. But I actually felt myself being afraid and wanting to cover my eyes and look away, like when he was in the cave fishing for the gun, or like when you saw the like when they were walking along the ocean floor and the creatures could be literally anywhere, I was scared. Like, I was so tense and freaked out because of how creepy those creatures looked.
Yeah. And this movie does such a really good job at just building that intensity, the feeling of the depths of the unknown and all that darkness, and just feeling like when everyone is split up and you're just alone, and you know there's just like a big bad out there, but you have no idea what it is, and it's just, it can come out at you at any time. Mm-hmm. And it's so like, it gets your heart racing, you know, because you can kind of, you really feel it.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's, a lot of credit has to go into how it was filmed and a lot of the sound too, because those moments, like when they're in their suits and the camera is close up on each of their faces, like when it's just like, you know, the star is Kristen Stewart, so we're going to be mentioning her a lot, but like when it's just focused on her and you feel like you're inside that suit with her.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even show like her whole face. You see her face is kind of cut off and you can hear those like muffled echoed sounds of the sea that's surrounding them.
Uh-huh.
And you kind of feel engulfed by this, you know, this moment of being in the dark sea. And obviously being in a theater, that adds to it, of course.
Yeah. You know. Oh, this is definitely a movie that if you can see it in theaters, which I don't know why someone would be listening this far into the podcast if they haven't seen it already, but definitely it's definitely a movie for the theaters. But the sound in this movie was amazing. The score was really good. And I like that you mentioned like the shots of like her being like super close up, like inside her helmet. Cause I felt like a lot of the point of view shots in this movie were also really good. Like there was one that stood out to me in the very beginning when they're crawling through the tunnels they find the captain, and she's like looking around trying to find a way through, and she kind of peeks up over a ledge. There were a couple point of view shots in that sequence that really made you feel like you're right there, like super claustrophobic, kind of way that they did in The Descent, like super close claustrophobia. Super good.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Like every moment is tight. Like you feel how tight it is between, like how tight it is in the corridor, how tight they are within each, like next to each other. And you think, it can't get any closer than this. And they find a way to get you even more scrunched up in a moment somehow. Yeah. And like that seems a good example of like, oh, you think it sucks now? Give it a few more seconds.
Right.
And that's where yeah. TJ Miller's humor kind of helps into is like, he's just like, he's a big guy. He is not a skinny fellow. And he's just like, I'm not going to fit in there.
Yeah.
he's just crawling in there with like his skibbies on. You know?
With his bunny.
Right. His ripped boxers.
Yeah. Which that, I like that. Like that attitude, because it's like, yeah, you know that he's not the same size as Kristen Stewart. She's skin and bones and he is an amorphous person. So it's just like, how is he going to get in there?
Right.
You know, like I felt like I related. It's like, oh man, I would have fit in that thing. I would have died.
Right. No, definitely. Yeah.
And that's all just right in the beginning, because then you see them crawling through that tight little crevice and they pass by, you know, one of their other, you know, coworkers, teammates.
Yeah.
And then there's just like that face, that look of horror before they died. It was just like, you have to crawl past this body
right
to get to the other side.
And when, like, when she had to move their hand out of the way.
Yeah.
Like, awkward. That would be such a hard thing to do, because it's like, from the way that they're talking, you can tell that she knows this person. Like she was like, oh, it's this person, and then she has to move their dead hand out of the way so that they can get by to see if there are pods or other survivors or something like that. And that moment is like one of those moments that really kind of drove home how traumatic everything that was happening on that drill was.
Yeah. And I gotta say, like, another thing that I liked about this is that you didn't feel, even though one person is the leader and the star of the film, you didn't think that anyone was off limits. Like you felt like, all right, everyone could die.
Yeah.
At any moment.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Cause she had close calls. So it's like, all right, this is where she's going to go now.
She had close calls, like in the same way that Sandra Bullock's character had a lot of close calls in Gravity. Like there was definitely a Gravity feel to a lot of the stuff that Kristen Stewart's character was going through. But that does kind of bring up like my other like main gripe with the movie, which is, again, it's not a huge gripe, but it is weird to me that someone would make a movie like at this point of time where they have the black guy die first, like the only black guy.
Like, I didn't even think about that.
Sort of like, like, why? You know that people don't like that. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah.
In theory, he didn't die first. A whole other side of the crew died first.
That's true.
We saw two people running and they didn't make it.
332 people.
Yeah. We saw at least a white girl died before he did.
Yeah. That's true. There were some nameless people that did die first. Yeah. He seemed like he was going to be a really good character too. I would have liked to see more of him.
Yeah. He felt important.
Yeah.
And that's what really brings to the point where like anyone could go anymore, because you feel that he's important. And yeah, then he went.
That's true. Since he's like the second person that you meet.
Yeah. Because you think about like, here's like big spoiler, like the two people who survive are the last two people you expected to survive.
Yes.
That's very true.
Like, I thought, because Henwick's character of Emily, she wasn't really bringing anything to the table except being scared and kind of crying most of the time, which in this movie, you always have that person. There's always that person who's just like, oh, we're not going to make it. Or like, oh, I'm so scared. Like, I can't do this. Right. You know, and she did that. She did it well, you know, and it got to a point where you don't see her anymore. It's like, well, yeah, okay, she died. That's obvious.
Right.
You know. Right. And then, and you think like Stuart's all by herself, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, lo and behold, we see Emily is still alive, and not only is she alive, but she's dragging her dying boyfriend across the sea floor to their checkpoint.
Yeah,
and it's
yeah.
like holy snap! Like she got the strength out of nowhere.
You
know?
Yeah,
honestly, at that point, I thought she was crazy because in my brain, like as soon as his oxygen tank was broken, I was like, he's dead. He's done. But she's so crazy at this point. Right. She's just dragging his body and just talking to him because there's no one else to talk to.
Yeah, I was worried about that too.
I thought Nora was crazy. I thought Nora was imagining that they were there.
Oh. Yeah. I thought that something was actively tricking her. Like, because we didn't really see that. Like, we saw a good amount of the creatures at that point. But it was also like it was still kind of ambiguous, like what their whole deal was until the scene that immediately followed that. So I thought that either it really was the two of them and they were both dead and the creatures had a hold of them somehow. Almost like with a, not exactly like a face hugger and chest burster, but they kind of already put the idea of alien in your mind with that scene with the baby, because it looked like visually it looked really similar to the face hugger scene, the way it was lit and everything. So I thought that maybe one of them had like latched onto her and was like incubating like a baby or something somehow. Something that was tricking her, or that the lights she was seeing were something that the creatures were somehow creating.
Yeah, it was really odd too, because at the point where, you know, we lose the captain and she gets separated after they go in that cave. And then she ends up at that other station that, you know, that we see on the map of the beginning of the movie where, you know, the captain says, oh, that station has been abandoned. There's nothing there. We're not going to go there, even though it's closer.
Right.
So somehow, despite them going on the journey to Roebuck, which is on the other side, she somehow gets flipped around to this other station. And then she trucks along, doesn't encounter any other creature, and she somehow catches up to Nora. That all just kind of felt kind of weird to me, because then at that point when she caught up to Nora, they weren't far from the station, it didn't seem.
That's true.
She caught up with Emily.
Yeah,
my character's mixed up, but you know what I mean.
No, yeah. their sense of distance seemed a little skewed at times.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah. Because walking, like, they made it seem like it was about 2 miles or so from their initial location. And walking 2 miles on land is not that bad. Mm-hmm. Walking 2 miles underwater is a whole other story.
Yeah. In those heavy dive suits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you only have so much oxygen that you have to spare, you know. And the more action that you cause, the more oxygen you're using. And they went through some stuff.
Yeah. Right.
Like, something I will note, so to give people like an understanding of what fully happens, because we kind of just talking about things that the scenes and everything that's been going on.
Yeah.
But the full on premise is like they are like a deep sea, super deep. Like, what was the trench that they're under? It's like
Mariana's Trench.
The deepest part of the ocean. And they're drilling for what we assume is oil, because what else will we drill for?
Right.
And one of their stations starts collapsing in. So all the people that are surviving from that station are trying to get to another location, but there's no escape pods and their only option is to put on their diving suits and walk across this trench. So there's, along this way, they meet some creatures, of course, that we discover came out of this crack, this hole that they've been drilling. And now they're trying to survive these monsters. Now, there's been a lot of parallels, which we'll probably talk about a little further, you know, to things like Aliens, The Abyss, you mentioned Gravity. I also think it has a lot of Pandorum kind of feels. But there's one story that this directly mimics, like almost to a T, except for like maybe the main character's persona. Mm-hmm. And that's The Wake by Scott Snyder. It's a comic book that came out probably like, I want to say 2012, maybe even actually 2015, I should say. It's by Vertigo Comics. Sean Gordon Murphy is the artist. And it's like 10 issues long. And the premise, the first 5 issues is almost this movie.
Really?
Yeah. So in this book, you have this, I think she's a cetologist. It's someone who studies like whales, dolphins, porpoises, and stuff like that, and their whole genealogy and everything about them. She knows everything there is to know about these creatures, and so she's called upon by this very secret hush-hush company that has an oil rig that's on like the deepest part of the ocean, and they've come across this creature and they've trapped it. And this creature has an echolocation, which is similar to those animals. So they're hoping that she can help them understand what this creature is. And it's like a merman of sorts. We end up discovering there's a bunch of mermen under the sea. And by the 5th issue, we see a giant-sized merman that is, it dwarfs the other little guys. Like, he's pretty much like a kaiju-sized thing.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's all underwater. It's in this station. Like all of the stuff that happens in this movie kind of happens to them. And so for me, I'm watching this film. It's like, why do I feel like I've seen this before? And when at the very end, which I gotta say, like, that was so cool seeing like all of the sleeping sea creatures. And they're just, nothing's happening. Like, she kind of sneaks by them. And you're just wondering, it's like, how come they're not coming after her? And then all of a sudden, when we see that this big thing move and they're moving with it, and it's like an arm, and it's like, holy shit, what is that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And to see this massive, like, I don't think anyone expected to see this massive beast like come over and just like put a shadow upon this little drill station.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Like, how you don't have a heart attack, I don't know.
Honestly. Yeah. I don't even know what I would do. I would just be like, okay, well, there's no way that we can survive whatever the hell that thing is. So I'm just going to lay down.
I'm tired.
Take a nap. Take a breather right here.
Good night forever.
Me and the bunny. I'm just going to snuggle up to it and just take a nap.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. At that point, that's that station that they were journeying to, that was their last bastion of hope. Yeah. And it's completely taken over by those things. So it's like,
right,
well, here we are.
Yeah. Which that kind of made me think, like, if that station was already kind of taken over by those, wouldn't they have gotten some kind of distress signal or call? Which, I mean, maybe not, but if you think about that, they like normally would have, it becomes really horrifying that they didn't, because it means that the creature takeover was just so complete and immediate that no one had time to do anything. It's really unsettling to think about all the stuff that we didn't see, because we're just following these, like, this small group of characters around.
show.
Yeah, yeah, because it opens up like she's in the bathroom, probably like showering, or she's brushing her teeth. Actually,
yeah,
she's brushing her teeth, and the sense is, it could either be she's brushing her teeth and getting ready for her work day, or she's brushing her teeth and getting ready to go to bed. But there's definitely like a switching of the guard kind of moment. Because everyone's asleep. So it's like, all right, something's going on here where like people should have been at least at stations for something. And it's like, what happened that no one had some kind of alert? Like there's no cameras? Like no one's monitoring anything.
Right.
You know? And I kind of felt like maybe part of me was like, okay, this something that should have took time for that creature to be how it was settled over that. But at the same time, maybe it finally got out of the hole and it was resting for like a moment. And it, when it landed itself, like just plopped itself on top of the station, that's what initiated all of the other things, like the tremor that ended up destroying their part of the station. You know? And that's how come they didn't know. But that's, who knows? That's a what if. Maybe that's what happened.
Yeah.
But yeah. That's all I could. When that beast finally came out, and I saw, I was like, "Oh, this is the wake. That's what this story is."
Yeah, I'm gonna have to look into that because, I mean, if Scott Snyder wrote it and Sean Gordon Murphy drew it, and it's like that's the premise of it, that sounds amazing.
Well, that's just the first five issues.
Oh, okay.
So the first five issues take place in, we'll say, present time, and then the five issues that come next are actually in the future, and it kind of has like this water world. It's just there's just water everywhere, and you're following this new character and her dolphin, which she's able to kind of communicate with.
Oh, that's fun.
And now there's more of like it kind of builds more on the lore of the merman and what they have to do with the world and everything. And if I remember correctly, because it's been a while since I've read it, but the main character from the first half of the arc, she has like a hologram kind of like a recorded message or whatever. Like she kind of lives on through some kind of computer, and she's able to like talk to the new character that's leading this story.
Oh,
and everything. But it's really good. Like it's Scott Snyder. It's worth reading. Right. You know, and the creatures look so like they're kind of like a combination of a gill man and a mermaid together.
Okay. Interesting.
But with more teeth.
Can't forget the teeth.
Right. Yeah, it's just teeth everywhere. Oh,
man. I mean, that's kind of what this big monster was like Cthulhu, but with more teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I'm glad you brought up the point about the lore behind it, because one of the things that I really liked about Underwater was we didn't get any lore or backstory or mythology or explanation whatsoever, which is good because I feel like it would have made this movie, for how heavy the pacing was, feel kind of clunky and be a little weird. But I did notice that they managed to sneak in some sort of details that made you kind of think of mythology, even though nothing specific or explicit was being stated. Like with the painting that Emily took like a second to look at, with like the angels being grabbed by the tentacles. And then there was one point where they were in a room. I don't remember quite where they were. I think it was before they went through the lift that took them down to the bottom. But there was some carvings on the wall behind the captain that seemed a little bit out of place for how sort of functional and mechanical everything else about the drill felt. And then when they were introducing the drills themselves, they were calling them like Poseidon class and Triton class. So it was like there were hints of mythology that didn't really tie into anything, but it at least sort of put you in the state of mind of thinking about what is going on here? Like, what is the mythology of this? Like, it just sort of like hinting at it, I think, did a much more effective job than if they had actually like tried to explain anything. I'm really glad that they didn't try to do that.
Yeah, I can agree.
Yeah, yeah.
Because this movie, it's survival. It's just you're following these people and hoping that they make it. So having to spell all of that out, the rhyme or reason of what these things are, it's just, I agree. It would have just taken away from the whole experience.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very much
subtle
like
foreshadowing.
Yeah. And like you were saying earlier, it was all show and almost no tell, which was my favorite kind of writing for a movie, especially a movie like this.
Yeah, which is something that's impressive for a movie. Like, I think this is a movie that has no franchise behind it. It's not a sequel of any sort. It's not a reboot. You know, this is what we're typically used to in this day and age. Are those things, you know, and all those types of films as of late fall victim to that.
Yeah.
You know, to that form of storytelling where it's just like, I'm going to give you a ton load of exposition here, but I'm not going to give you anything worthwhile to remember.
Right.
You know,
right.
And granted, we're boasting about this film quite a bit in the sense of like it is the next big thing, and it's not bringing anything new to the table that we haven't seen from classics like the things I've mentioned earlier. But it definitely learned from those films on what works.
Oh, totally. Yeah. It was a really interesting experience. I watched The Abyss for the first time the day before I saw this movie. And having that really direct comparison between the two, like with Abyss fresh in my mind, I'll say I think The Abyss was a good movie, but I didn't like it personally. I probably won't ever watch it again. I should note, now that I know the one I watched is the special edition that has the tsunamis at the end. Maybe without that, I would have liked it a little bit better. I mean, technically, it was a very good movie. It's a James Cameron movie. He always pushes the technical boundaries of filmmaking in some really impressive ways. But I have to say, as a writer, like a story writer, he's super hit or miss for me. And this was a big miss. I didn't like the storyline. I wanted it to be much, I guess, sort of deeper than it is. I mean, not physically, since obviously they're very deep in the ocean, but it was a movie with a lot of telling and not a whole lot of showing. And I found myself I felt a little bit dragged through it. Whereas like Underwater was like the complete opposite of, it was just like, go, 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 show, no tell. And it really sort of hit all the points that Abyss missed for me in particular.
Yeah. Abyss is probably more, I think for its time, it's a visual spectacle.
Right.
You know, because there's so many things that Cameron was doing back then that no other film was pulling off.
Right.
You know, especially with the special effects of what you saw of the aliens and everything. And it's so beautiful to watch. And this movie was not focused on beauty whatsoever.
Oh no.
You know, like this was more of like an Underwater Aliens kind of film,
right?
Honestly, as compared to that. I think when going into this, I was thinking to myself like, oh, it's underwater, there's some creatures, it might be like Abyss, because that's the first thing I probably think of. But it was definitely more like it related more with any space creature film,
right,
than anything that would have been underwater.
Yeah, definitely have to agree, because I mean it was making a lot of visual references to Alien, like with that scene with the baby. It felt just like that, the face hugger and chest burster scene from Alien. One thing that Abyss did that I liked that this movie definitely didn't do was, I mean, obviously the aliens in Abyss are really sort of benevolent in their way, and the visual storytelling of Abyss really showed that. I really like the way that so often the only way to see the aliens was in the reflection of the characters' helmets. Whereas I felt like Underwater did something that was kind of similar, but it was all sort of like in a point of view shot where it's like it, everything felt like you were seeing them only in your peripheral vision, which had a really big impact on how unsettling and terrifying they were.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. That sense of it being in the corner of your eye, and never knowing where it's going to be and where it's coming from,
right,
added to that feeling for sure.
Yeah,
I don't know what else I could say about this movie besides that everyone should watch it.
Yeah,
yeah, it was a good time.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm really looking forward to seeing a lot of the behind the scenes of this movie and get like a closer look at these creatures, because they seem like they have some really interesting biology. Like, obviously, like you could see from their hands hanging down during that scene from when they were sleeping, they do appear to have bones. And then their eyes reflect the light, which was super unsettling. But then the way it was sort of trying to consume her was creepy as hell. And I want to know more, like, what that looks like with those awful mouths.
It was like swallowed a snake. Her?
Yeah. Right. It, like, unhinged and just, like, swallowed her up.
Right.
Yeah, it was weird. Like, I question, like, what its bone structure is in its body. Like, it's true. Like, its arms definitely had a bone structure. But, like, its rib cage area, it's like, I don't know. Like, it felt like it was just a bunch of skin wrapping around her.
Right. Because it was trying to swallow her whole.
Yeah. And it practically succeeded.
Yeah.
Thank goodness for, what was that, a flare gun?
Yeah. Yeah. She had a two-shot flare gun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that when she shot it at the big thing was crazy. Like, I'm sure my jaw was on the floor as I was watching it.
Yeah, that part right there, it reminded me of, like, two things. One, to further more connect with Aliens. I think of Aliens, the sequel, and that moment when you see the queen, and it's just like,
yeah.
Oh, great, yeah. There's a bigger one. God damn it. God
damn. Yeah, it totally felt like that. Yeah.
And it also made me think of, like, Cloverfield. And, like, that scene at the end when you finally get to see the whole creature. Because through that whole movie, you're just seeing, like, glimpses of what it is.
Yeah.
And you're seeing a bunch of little creatures and everything, you know, kind of, like, come from it. But you never see the thing. And at the end, when you finally see it, and you're like, oh, damn. That shit's no joke.
Yeah. I have seen some comparisons to Cloverfield with this movie. Like, I've seen people making that comparison. And for me, it's like the tone is so different that it doesn't really fit for me. But I mean, I guess if you're going to have a giant monster movie with TJ Miller in it, then yeah. Even though he was like a baby in Cloverfield. And then, of course, like, there's a big one and there's little things coming off of it. But that's about kind of where the comparison stops for me. Although I could see this movie being really big for Cloverfield fans. Not the Cloverfield extended universe, whatever it is that we have now, but just Cloverfield specifically. Because it does feel like sort of a traditional monster movie done in kind of a new way. Although this one doesn't really have the new way so much as it just has like it's a really high quality monster movie that you can tell they took a lot of care into fleshing out all the details of and not adding any frills to. Whereas Cloverfield has like the inventive way of showing it, but the characters and story felt really flat.
Yeah, I'm very, you know what I want to see? Like, I'm with you on seeing like the behind the scenes stuff, because I'm curious about how much practical the CGI stuff was used. Like, I can guarantee there's plenty of CGI that was in this film. But this was a good example of when it was used, it was very well done. Because I'm pretty sure all the underwater stuff is all CGI.
Yeah,
but this is when, like, it's so dark down there, everything's so gritty. This is when you can take advantage of the things, the downfalls of CGI and make it work to your benefit. Because it felt like they were underwater. Those creatures, when they're swimming around them, it felt real.
Yeah, that's true. You
know? And then getting to see the baby version of it, it's like, well, that's practical. We can tell that's a real thing. At least right. I hope it is. Because if that was CG too, I'm going to be amazed.
<You know? laughs> Honestly,
it's just like a head on a stick.
Yeah, the way their arms were swaying as they were sleeping made it feel really convincing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because like the physics of it, it felt like just really eerie seaweed, you know, as they're kind of like traversing through when they're asleep. And then, of course, one wakes up and eats her. But, you know, just like the way everything kind of just like floats around. It just, at that point, it was kind of ethereal in a way, but also very creepy.
Yeah. No, totally.
Which makes me something I just thought of right now. So that scene when they're dealing with the little baby version on the table, right? And I think TJ Miller actually asked the question, he's like, so is that a baby?
Yeah,
you know? He did, yeah.
And so for me, I'm thinking, it's like, all right, let's say that's a baby, right? And then the bigger ones that we saw on the outside, those are quote unquote adults. What does that make the bigger one? Like, is the bigger one mama? Or is the bigger one possibly what they could become?
Oh, that would be horrifying
to be that size.
Oh my god!
But at the same time, like they were all attached to it, because like when it moved its arm or tentacle, or whatever, they were a part of it. But then it kind of unleashed them when the two were escaping in their escape pods. So it's like I want to know how that works.
Yeah. It felt very like hive sentient kind of
control.
Yeah. You know what it kind of reminded me of? It reminded me of the last shot of Shin Godzilla, but sort of the reverse of that, where it has all the humanoids that are starting to split off of it.
Yeah.
It sort of gave me that level of vibe. Like maybe there's like, maybe that's just the queen bee. And it has all these little drones that kind of go and do what it wants, but also have their own sort of like a little bit of sentience. I think it's really unsettling how humanoid the overall shape of these creatures were, because I want to see the special features to take a look at their structure, because their arms seemed kind of humanoid. Which it's and so did the big ones. Like it had arms and a head and a torso, very much like a human and not a sea creature. So like what are the implications of that?
Or what if, because there's that part where they leave, you know, that drill site, their first drill site that they were stationed at, and then they go after they saw that escape pod that didn't quite make it. And so when TJ Miller's character and other guy, Smith, I think his name
Smith,
was. And they go off, to investigate and see if there's a survivor out there. They found a guy and his back was exposed and it has that creature on it. What if the creatures were, you know, melding together with those bodies? Because you never see other bodies as we go along. And if they're at that station, there should be other dead bodies. So what if those people became those creatures?
Yeah, because there was the whole other drill. Oh, that's horrifying.
You know, it's funny you say that, because that's something that happens in The Wake.
Really?
Of course.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So in The Wake, if you get bitten by one of the mermen, you'll turn into one of the mermen.
Oh, dang.
Oh my God.
So that would explain like, the whole, like that sentient, like, beings, is like they're under that control of the queen or whatever.
Should
be more bodies.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, you're right. Oh, that's so horrifying. Oh, that's terrifying. I love it.
Yeah, because even when there were so many escape pods that weren't there.
Yeah, even when they're in the tunnel and they're finding like that package of like the goodies and stuff. Like, oh, someone had like a package of stuff. So there had to have been workers in that tunnel.
Yeah.
Where did they go?
Yeah, because I mean, it would be easy to explain, oh, they just got eaten. But yeah, why would a creature start from the back where all the bones are? Like, it would make sense to eat from like the front. That's, oh my goodness. if that's what they were going for, that's so crazy unsettling.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it.
Yeah, it makes sense why there's no like distress signals from anywhere else from the other station that was clearly taken over.
Right.
They were trying to go to.
Right.
Because all those bodies are taken over.
Ooh. Oh, that's my new headcanon. I love that.
I think that just adds to how good this film was. Like, it makes you ask questions that are good questions.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. It's like the same thing that Alien did. Like, you see the alien for the first time, like the adult one. I mean, the chest burster and the face hugger are both kind of horrifying in their own right. But then you look at the xenomorph and you're like, oh my God, this thing is so unsettling. How did it get to be the way that it is, with like the crazy sort of spikes that aren't spikes coming out of its back and its second mouth and its head that is shaped like that with no visible eyes, like, but it still stands like a human, makes it so extra unsettling.
Yeah, especially the first version, you see like the skull through the head.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, H.R. Giger, man, did such a great job with the designs of all that. Yeah. Thinking about Alien makes me like underwater more, because for both of those movies, so much of it is like the set they did such a good job with. Like the setting in the beginning with that shot, the 360 shot where you just kind of go, you're looking around the halls, and then you see like bundles of wire that are clearly like, they're not tangled. They're all straightforward wire, but they're just kind of hanging on the outside of the wall, and everything is sort of like a weird brown. And it just like, you really get a sense of that whole facility so clearly just in that one shot. And then hearing things in the background and seeing the poster about like the buddy system and all that.
Yeah.
They did a really good job with the setting of this movie, not just for how murky and terrifying the underwater scenes were, but yeah, it worked really well as both a disaster and a monster movie.
Yeah, that's true. It definitely felt very lived in.
Uh-huh.
When you see the whole set, which adding to that, I loved the design of those suits, those underwater suits.
Oh yeah,
it was so cool. Like, it made me think of like the Big Daddy from BioShock.
Yeah,
but at the same time, it felt like a suit that you'd see like in like a shooter. You know,
it made me think of Gears of War.
Yeah.
That bulkiness.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny, I actually, when Nora goes to the little base and then has to kind of approximate her own suit, she puts that other one on.
Yeah.
I actually turned to Thurston at that point when it had that shot of the helmet and the sort of little cylinders coming out of it. I was like, oh, it's a Big Daddy. It totally felt like BioShock.
Yeah. Which, okay, so we had our TJ Miller complaint. Here's a little complaint I actually had about this moment. And it's nothing big. It's just a minor thing. I would have loved to have seen a full-on MacGyver moment.
Yeah.
Where she's just like piecing things together. Because you get the sense of what she was going to do, and she pretty much did. But I would love to have seen like her just grab more parts and kind of like just really quick. It could have been a quick 3-minute thing. And we just see her putting things together, you know, and she's blowtorching some stuff real quick or whatever. And I thought that would have been cool. It kind of like that Iron Man 3 moment where she's just making a suit for herself.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree.
But that's nitpicking. That's all that is. Like, she was still really badass in the moment.
I wanted to see more of whatever was going on in the back of that locker from the captain that she found.
Yeah.
Because they had the map. but there was something else going on around it that almost mm-hmm. looked like some kind of drawing. And it made me, like, the way that that shot was set up, it kind of seemed like she was about to start uncovering stuff and then find this whole conspiracy or something. And I'm mm-hmm. glad that they didn't go that route. But I do want to see more of what that was. Like, as soon as this comes out on Blu-ray, I feel like I'm going to have to get it and then pause it on that shot just to see what all this is.
Analyze it, yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, I got to say, like, when you first see the captain, he has moments of sketchiness.
I agree.
Yeah. You know? He really does. Especially because the actor, I always forget his name.
Vincent Cassel.
Yeah. He does such a good job of playing like the ambiguous character. Like, is this person a mm-hmm. good guy or a bad guy? So I kept thinking that he was going to somehow be in on some shady stuff. And I'm glad that they didn't go that route, because it just would have muddied it up and then mm-hmm. it would have needed exposition and whatever. So I'm glad that they didn't do that, but it definitely kept you guessing.
Yeah. I do definitely feel like, as we see his interaction, he does totally seem like he knows more than he's letting on. Uh-huh. And I couldn't tell if he was just like losing it because he's been underwater for too long, or if there is actually something going on that he knows about, that, you know, these guys are just clueless about.
Yeah.
Some ulterior motive for him being down there.
Right.
Because that company is also sketchy as hell, because you see in the ending credits, like, despite everything that the two survivors, you know, talked about their experience down there, talking about the creatures, that company just redacted everything and continued drilling.
Right.
And even they denied everything.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then in the beginning, like, they were saying, like, hey, there's been some weird anomalies, but it doesn't get addressed. And I think the thing with the captain's daughter, how he was, you know, he seemingly got confused on her age, but then you find out it's because she passed away with that little memorial card.
It
definitely seems like, I mean, obviously there's more to that story, but it seems like they paid such special attention to it. It should have some kind of an impact on the story that we're seeing. And they didn't really explain why. So, it's hard to want a sequel from a movie like this, but I kind of want a sequel. Like, I want to know more, but I also don't want exposition.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that right there, like that moment with him and his remembering his daughter mm-hmm. incorrectly, is what made me think of like the movie Pandorum, because that movie plays with the idea of memories and thought and being uh-huh. being lucid within that space. Mm-hmm. You know, and when you're in such a claustrophobic area, you're kind of separated from the world and the majority of humanity. You kind of lose touch with time and who you are.
Uh-huh.
So I definitely got that with him in that moment, you know, with all the stress of possibly dying down there and mm-hmm. who knows how long they've actually been down there.
Right.
You know, and the last time they've actually seen people, that can take its toll on you.
Yeah. Right.
But I agree. There is that part of me. Like, I usually don't want a sequel to anything that is not meant to have a sequel.
Uh-huh.
But there is that part of me that's like, what could a sequel look like for this?
Yeah. Or some kind of a tie-in something. I want to know more. But there's so much of a risk of having the more be something really silly and not executed well.
Yeah.
That it's a hard ask. But I think that's what makes this movie so good. I feel like there's going to be, at least I hope there's going to be a lot of talk in the next few like months and maybe even years of what was this movie, like what was going on, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Next give me classic. A book.
Yeah.
Just give me a book about what everything is. There's just too much risk.
Yeah.
Of a movie going south.
Yeah. Here, like, I feel that.
I will read and look at concept. It. Oh, concept art. I wanted concept art on all these creatures and the suits and just like the blueprints of the ship and the pods. I want to see all that stuff.
Uh-huh. I was actually trying to find concept art of it last night. I did like a very like just a basic search, but it turns out if you Google underwater concept art, you don't really get what you're looking for. So I'm going to have to do some more digging, but maybe if a listener knows, they could send it to us because we all want to see it.
Yes. Very curious.
Yeah. I'll review that thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's what they shouldn't. I don't want to read like a book, like a novel. I just want to read like an art book.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I want pictures.
Yes.
I'm like a baby. I want a picture book.
Yeah.
Well, I think that that sums it up for us tonight. Yeah. Underwater is a movie worth watching. If you haven't seen it yet, check it out. If you do watch it, let us know your thoughts. Hop on our social media and give us a word or two, or all of them. Jason, where can everyone follow us?
They can follow us on Twitter at Famous Monsters. Also Instagram at Famous Monsters and Facebook.com/FMOL. Oh, sorry. No. FMOF.
L.
L.
Third time's a charm.
FMOFL. Okay. Facebook.com/FMOFL.
See, everyone, we make it so easy, it's hard on us.
Yeah.
And of course, you can also and should subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to your podcasting. As always, we are Famous Monsters. Till next time.
Bye.